Hello, listeners. Thank you for choosing Iris today. This is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, December 4th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast from KCRG. Light rain or snow showers possible Monday night, then warmer air in a few days. Much of the work and school week will be pretty quiet, but the lone exception arrives later this evening. Until then, expect partly to mostly cloudy skies in most locations, with the sun making an appearance at times. A little bit of light fog is possible this morning, though it appears that the denser fog is staying in western Iowa so far. Where clouds hang tough around here, temperatures may struggle to warm more than a few degrees today. With some sun, things could easily reach the upper 30s to low 40s. Fast-moving storm system drops in from the northwest by this evening and tonight, carrying at least a little precipitation with it. This will fall in the form of scattered rain or snow showers as it moves through. While amounts should be light, there's the chance that parts of the area could see a dusting to perhaps half an inch of snow accumulate. Areas in the northeast would have the best shot at this. The time range for precipitation will be from around 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock p.m. this evening until about 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock a.m. on Tuesday morning. With precipitation likely to exit early, most of Tuesday should be dry, with temperatures warming back to the upper 30s or around 40. We'll even see whatever light amount of snow that sticks melt. Skies will be partly cloudy on average, with cloudier skies a bit more likely the farther east you go. For the second half of the work week, we await a decent warm-up. While Wednesday shows the first signs of it, with highs in the low to mid-40s as winds shift to a more southerly direction, the bigger jump takes place for Thursday into Friday. That's when highs will likely push into the 50s for most of the area, with overnight lows staying as warm as the mid to upper 30s. It will be a brief bout of much warmer air, though, as things turn cooler into the weekend. That's our next biggest storm system arrives, giving us a shot at some periods of rain or snow at times. A lot of the system will depend on its track, with the computer models we use to help make our forecasts varying quite a bit still at this range. One thing that seems a bit more certain is that the relatively cooler air stays into early next week, with temperatures near or just above normal remaining likely. Articles on the front page of the Courier today include Wrong Number, New Friendship. Man makes connection with elderly woman who called accidentally. The story was written by Donald A. Promnitz, and it begins with a photograph of two jubilant adults, and the caption says, Brad Swartz of New Hartford meets Norma Vanderloo for the first time at Friendship Village Retirement Community, where Vanderloo is a resident, on Tuesday in Waterloo. The two began a friendship after Vanderloo inadvertently misdialed Swartz's phone number several times while trying to reach her daughter, Rhonda, who has a similar number. The dateline is Waterloo. Getting the wrong number is usually a minor inconvenience. For New Hartford Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Brad Swartz, it was the start of an unlikely friendship. It began when Swartz got a call from an elderly woman on his work phone at Cedar Falls Utilities. When he answered, she realized it was the wrong number and hung up before he could find out more. It happened a few more times, and eventually he was able to keep her on the phone. Quote, I couldn't keep her on the phone long enough to figure out who she was, Swartz said. And I'm like, she's always trying to get a hold of somebody, and she's never getting them. She's getting the wrong person, unquote. Swartz finally figured out who she was. He learned her name was Norma Vanderloo, and that she lived at Friendship Village. He discovered the intended recipient of her accidental dials was her daughter, Rhonda Denherder, with her number ending in 2923 and his in 9223. The two had a few brief conversations when Vanderloo misdialed, but one day before Thanksgiving, he was unable to get to the phone. Thinking it was her daughter, Vanderloo explained in the voicemail that her husband, Virgil, was having a bad day with his health. Feeling bad for her, Swartz decided to do something for his accidental acquaintance. Vanderloo, 95, was surprised to find a small Christmas tree waiting for her, courtesy of Swartz. Meanwhile, the staff at Friendship Village took down his information despite Swartz's best efforts to stay anonymous. Quote, "Even when I dropped it off, I tried running out the door, and there were three people and one. She was not letting me get out," Swartz said. "So I had to explain, quote, 'This is going to be weird that I'm bringing this. You don't know me, but this is kind of how it happened. So I explained it all to them,'" unquote. This resulted in Swartz and his wife, Kobe, finally meeting Vanderloo for dinner at Friendship Village on Tuesday. Quote, "So often, people don't go that extra mile. But also, you were so special in that families tend to not pay attention to folks as they age, and we see it so often," Friendship Village CEO Lisa Gates told him over dinner. "But you went the extra mile, just for somebody you didn't even know," unquote. "I love this because one of our core values is being family-focused," said Sheila Brunst-Kern, "and we are family, as like this is such an awesome, awesome example of that." For her part, Vanderloo said that her encounter with Swartz was all she was hoping for and more, finding him as kind in person as he was on the phone. Quote, "I was hoping he would be a nice guy," she said. Meanwhile, Brad and Kobe Swartz have found in Vanderloo not only a friend, but a sudden extension to their family. Having lost all their grandparents previously, the two said they've adopted Vanderloo as an honorary grandmother. Quote, "I said to Brad, 'This is kind of full circle,'" Kobe said. "We're getting a grandma, even if you get to talk to her on the phone, and we live in grandma's house, so it's pretty nostalgic to us that we just have that connection," unquote. Quote, "It's crazy how it all worked out," Swartz said. Vanderloo seemed more than happy to take up the mantle, amazed that a wrong number somehow added to the size of her family. Quote, "What are you going to bring next?" Vanderloo joked. People's Community Health Clinic receives $4.2 million gift from philanthropist Mackenzie Scott. Melody Parker wrote this story, and the dateline is Waterloo. People's Community Health Clinic has received a charitable contribution of $4.2 million from U.S. billionaire philanthropist and author Mackenzie Scott. News of the unsolicited donation left CEO Christine Kemp momentarily speechless. She was contacted in October about receiving the funds. Quote, "The donation came out of the blue. I didn't know what questions to ask at first because it was so hard to process," Kemp said. The one-time, unrestricted donation was made through Yield Giving, the foundation Scott started in 2019. Yield is named after a belief in adding value by giving up control, according to its website. The organization has donated $14 billion to more than 1,600 nonprofits around the world. People's Clinic, located at 905 Franklin Street, was selected based on its service to the community. This is the largest donation in the clinic's history. "A gift of this size is a great honor and responsibility," she said, "and it comes with no strings attached," unquote. Usually, grants or other monetary gifts require regular progress reports and the addition of a service or raising matching funds. Yield representatives told her, quote, "We don't need any progress report. We believe you know what your organization needs better than we do and how to use the funds to get stronger and better," Kemp explained. Scott is the ex-wife of Jeff Bezos, Amazon's founder and chairman. As part of their 2019 divorce, after 25 years of marriage, Scott received a 4% stake in the online retailer, according to Forbes. She is considered the third wealthiest woman in the United States. Scott is a signatory to the Giving Pledge, which commits her to giving at least half of her wealth to charity. Forbes reported the unrestricted nature of her donations are not considered the norm for such philanthropic organizations. It is too soon to decide where the yield funds will be put to use at People's Clinic, Kemp said. Quote, what we've been talking about is finding a way to hold on to the principal and grow it a little bit. Putting that money aside, we're going to see what we can earn off it and add to the long-term stability of our organization, unquote. The grant validates the amazing work done by clinic staff, and Kemp is grateful for Scott's generous and transformative gift. We focus on providing the highest quality care for our patients and reducing as many barriers as we can, such as housing, insurance, and transportation, language barriers, or the ability to afford medication. Quote, we've been recognized at a national level by a private donor who has no ties to the area because of that quality of service for the patients we serve, Kemp said. The Salvation Army finds season's first gold coins in red kettles. Our journalist is Melody Parker, and the dateline is Waterloo. The story begins with a photograph taken of three men in front of a Christmas tree and the Salvation Army logo. The caption says, volunteers from DuPaco Community Credit Union found the first gold coins in the Salvation Army's red kettles, one found at Crossroads Hy-Vee in Waterloo and another at the Cedar Falls Walmart. Two gold coins were discovered in the Salvation Army's red kettles on Wednesday. Volunteer bell ringers from DuPaco Community Credit Union found the coins, which had been dropped in red kettles at Crossroads Hy-Vee and Walmart in Cedar Falls. These are the first gold coins received during the annual holiday campaign, said Katie Harnes, a volunteer at Community Relations Coordinator. Quote, the coins are anonymously dropped in the kettles and are usually wrapped in plastic or a special coin sleeve. Whoever is making the donations knows how to do it very mysteriously because the bell ringers didn't know the coins had been dropped in the kettles, Harnes explained. There is no record of when the gold coin donation started, she said, but we know it's been over two decades. We do know who the original donors were, but they have since passed away, and others have carried on their legacy. These new donors do remain a mystery to us, unquote. Coins are auctioned off to help raise additional funds to meet the Red Kettle campaign goal. Last year, the campaign received 12 1-ounce U.S. American Eagle coins, a 2015 Special Service Force coin, a 1910 Indian Head $2.50 coin, and 1-ounce silver bar, a 1-ounce silver coin, and 1854 and 1855 California gold half-dollar coins, according to a Courier article published on January 1st of 2023. The auction raised $25,205 for the campaign. Quote, I hope the fact that the gold coins have started to arrive, that it rejuvenates our Red Kettle campaign as we enter the last 23 days. It's so important for the public to donate because the Salvation Army does so much good for the community and needs public support, Harn said. Bell ringing ends at 6 p.m. on December 23rd. Interested volunteers can sign up and select ring date, time, and location online at registertoring.com. Families, groups, and individuals are encouraged to volunteer. Limit 3 ringers per stand. At present, the Salvation Army is at $184,726 toward its $651,000 goal that is needed to continue to provide the needed services in 2024. The campaign accounts for 30% of the Salvation Army's budget for the coming year. all donations received by 11:59 p.m. on December 31st are tax deductible. Donations can be dropped off in person to the Salvation Army, 89 Franklin Street, or mailed to Post Office Box 867, Waterloo, Iowa, 50704. For more information, contact the Salvation Army at area code 319-235-9358. Now we have the next installment in the Courier's 20 Under 40 series, and it's titled Simon Harding, City Council Member Turns Page in Symphony of Life Community. This was written by Pat Kinney. Dateline Cedar Falls. Simon Harding sees a correlation between music and public service. Quote, I appreciate being able to have this dual role in the community of working with the arts and with government, said Harding, an accomplished saxophonist and co-owner of J&H Winds, who serves on the Cedar Falls City Council. Quote, while they don't cross paths much at all, I can utilize connections on both sides and information on both sides to be able to give back to Cedar Falls. That's something I really enjoyed exploring. Quote, the arts and what you have to do to survive in the arts really do help you make decisions in government, he said. You're always working with how you fund a project. Quote, you have to deal with people in the community to put on a successful project and present something musically that people are going to enjoy and come together to see. It's the same thing in government. You're trying to find money to do these quality of life projects or pay for infrastructure and also find a way to bring everybody together and be okay with each project. Quote, also, as a musician, you have to be a people person. It's the same thing in government, he said. You have to be able to interact with different citizens, different viewpoints, and different people from different walks of life. Quote, while you're not putting on a concert for them, you're trying to do something for them and trying to help them out within the realm of the city. Very similar roles in a lot of ways, unquote. He's developed a bond with another former elected official and musician, one-time council member Paul Ryder, a trumpet cornetist and trombone player, who was a member of the Saints Dixieland Jazz Band for many years. They worked together on the Cedar Basin Music Festival, which runs concurrent with the city's annual Sturgis Falls celebration over the last weekend in June every year. Quote, Paul was the reason I got involved in the jazz committee, said Simon. Ryder, who also encouraged Simon to run for the council, co-nominated Harding for the 20 Under 40 recognition. Of Harding, Ryder wrote, quote, his calm and deliberate style make him an effective city leader who handles difficult situations very well. He is a highly intelligent, critical thinker, who is highly regarded by those who have the pleasure of working with him, unquote. A fellow Cedar Basin committee member and co-nominator, Judith Harrington, added, although he and his family have made Cedar Falls home just since 2017, Simon has become a welcome, successful member of our community. She noted his J&H Winds business has a nationwide customer base for instrument repair and restoration. The music festival now has three stages, one of which is at New Aldea Lifescapes Retirement Community, where various types of jazz are featured through the weekend and has attracted a wide age demographic. Quote, it's 10 years old to 90 and tons of students from the University of Northern Iowa, he said. We've been really growing it. Originally from Charleston, South Dakota, Harding came to Waterloo to work at Tenor Madness, a Waterloo saxophone shop. Quote, I was playing full-time before that. I decided I wanted to have a calmer lifestyle, he explained, as opposed to being a touring musician. He worked there 4 years and started J&H Winds with Jimmy Jensen in August of 2021. Quote, we're still going strong. It's getting busier and busier, Harding said. We do UNI instruments, Drake University, Waterloo West High School, and local players, and even players from Chicago, Minneapolis, all over the country, with considerable online business. Being in business also carries over into government service, Harding said. Quote, civic service is customer service, he said. As a council representative for Ward 4, my job is to serve the citizens of Ward 4, give them good customer service, and be a liaison to city staff. That's the same thing as helping a customer be satisfied with the musical instrument, restoration, or service. Quote, you get to solve problems and have happy citizens or customers, depending on which side you're looking at. It's like a big Venn diagram, he said. Everything crosses in the center. However, after a single 4-year term on the council, he is not seeking re-election in order to focus on his business and family. He and his wife, Genevieve, have 2 sons who are 12 and 9, Oliver and Eli. Quote, that was a tough decision, he said, because I do love working with these people and making these decisions and shaping the future. But my wife is going to go back to school full-time, and the business is picking up. If I can't give it 100%, then I don't want to do it. And I have more responsibility at home now, unquote. He wants to stay active in city matters. Quote, I'm still going to stay involved, he said. He's interested in a council emeritus program instituted by outgoing Mayor Rob Green, in which former council members can serve as a resource and an institutional memory for current office holders and staff. He'd also like to serve on a city board or commission. Council service, he said, requires a whole lot more time and dedication than anyone but the people up there realize. In addition, during his council term, Harding has served as Green's mayor pro tem, chairing council meetings and serving as acting mayor in Green's absence. The position includes chairing the council's committee of the whole and community development committee meetings as well. He also led selection panels for various city board and commission posts. Green said Harding, quote, has cultivated a commendable reputation for accessibility, sound discernment, diligent work ethic, empathy, and optimism. But, Harding said, quote, it becomes a lot and something's got to give for you to be able to perform your best, unquote. And at this point in life, his family deserves his best. Blue Buffalo plant sold to new company. Independence plant to employ 200-plus workers eventually. Story filed by Andy Malone. Dateline Independence. The new owners of the former Blue Buffalo pet food manufacturing plant have confirmed plans to be an economic driver in a similar industry. On Friday, Independence Premium Foods, a portfolio company of Chaffia Capital Partners, officially purchased the 150,000-square-foot facility on 8.43 acres at 812 3rd Street Northwest from foods giant General Mills. Sean Kim, Chaffia Senior Vice President of Operations, said the plan is to bring upwards of 200 jobs, likely more, and invest at least $15 million in the plant once owned by Tyson Foods. The former Iowa ham plant previously had been in operation for more than 50 years. Quote, we saw it as an opportunistic investment, a complement to our portfolio, and felt it was an interesting opportunity to save and protect what we heard was the community's second largest employer and restore jobs that had been lost when the plant shut down, Kim said on Wednesday. The plan is to manufacture a wide array of food products, including pet food, as part of what Chaffia leadership view as a prime opportunity in the Midwest. Quote, we already have an exciting food company on the East Coast, and it made a lot of sense from a business perspective said Kim, confirming that it's one of two food processing companies the New York, New Jersey-based real estate investment and private equity firm has in its portfolio. Quote, "That's it for now," he added. "It doesn't mean we'll stop there, though." The other company is United Premium Foods, also in New Jersey, which has its own distinct leadership team and operation. Kim declined to reveal how many companies are in Chafia's portfolio and the purchase price for the Blue Buffalo plant. According to its website, Chafia Capital Partners maintains a broad industry focus and seeks to build a portfolio of quality investments in the areas of consumer products and goods, cybersecurity, financial services, manufacturing, medical devices, real estate, retail, robotics, technology, and media and telecommunications. Molly Wolf, a spokesperson for General Mills, confirmed the sale's completion without disclosing the dollar amount and noted the company's excitement for the opportunities the new owner will bring to the community, unquote. Former leaders at the Blue Buffalo plant, named after a pet food line, have been hired to help run the new operation. The list includes Jerob Pape, a General Mills operations manager who had been with the company for 10 years and is the plant manager at Independence Premium Foods. "Absolutely," he said about the goal to eventually hire in the range of 217 Blue Buffalo workers who lost their jobs on October 6th. With the future investment, quote, "We want to set the tone to make sure this facility is sustainable for a long time," unquote. "Everybody is excited to see this business grow, support the community, and continue being a good neighbor," said Pape, who currently lives in Cedar Rapids and is a Southeast Iowa native. The company, in announcing the purchase, emphasized its big promise is to support the town of Independence by rehiring many of the individuals who previously lost their jobs. Another focus is to back long-term employees and provide jobs to the local community. Quote, "I am excited to welcome Independence Premium Foods to our community," said Independence City Manager Matthew Schmitz in a statement. Quote, "Their decision to invest in and revitalize a long-standing facility in our town is not just a business transaction, it's a commitment to our shared future." The company hopes to hire about 100 people for salaried wage production and maintenance positions by the end of January, when production is anticipated to start. A person can apply online at ipfiowa.com. Work will start next month. Quote, "We'll have some initial construction there in December on infrastructure change to support the new business," said Pape. "There will be newer equipment and some different processes than what had been there before. Upgrades to handle new product," unquote. Now in the government politics section, the top story is, forum is one-sided, but Waterloo Council candidates clash afterwards. Maria Cooper wrote this story. Dateline Waterloo. A Wednesday forum at which two at-large city council candidates were supposed to debate turned out to be a dud after one candidate didn't show. But there were some fireworks Thursday. The Black Hawk Bremer League of Women Voters and the Black Hawk County NAACP held a forum for the current Ward 2 council member Jonathan Grider and runoff opponent Steve Simon on Wednesday. The two are vying for the at-large Waterloo City Council seat in Tuesday's runoff election. However, Simon didn't show up, citing a prior commitment. Moderator Dave Kivett, a member of both organizations holding the debate, read an email Simon sent the day before the forum explaining his absence. Quote, "I've been unable to reschedule with this compressed timeline of this runoff election," Kivett read. "It's very difficult to maintain obligations to the campaign and the family," unquote. In a later interview, Simon told the Courier he had a prior commitment to visit with voters one-on-one Wednesday night. Quote, I've scheduled appointments for the last 5 months, he said. I'm trying to accommodate as many people as I can at all times, and sometimes things overlap, unquote. Before the November election, three forums were held, and Simon attended all three. The first comments made by Grider on Wednesday night were in response to Simon's emailed statement. He said he was disappointed Simon could not take the time to have a conversation. Quote, I think that is a question that we should ask ourselves. Do we want a council member who can't make the time when the questions aren't that tough? Grider asked. And what's going to happen when the questions are? Unquote. Grider said he was missing his daughter's bedtime, but his family understands his decisions. Quote, to lead means to make a commitment, he continued. It means to be putting yourself in situations that require you to do things that aren't convenient, but to do things that are right. However, some people in the community didn't think the debate was fair to begin with. Multiple people sent the Courier emails noting moderator Vicky Brown previously endorsed Grider. Brown said she endorsed Grider as chairperson of the Blackhawk County Democrats. She serves in that role, as well as with the League of Women Voters and the local NAACP chapter. She said her participation as a moderator was solely in my capacity with those organizations, not as the Blackhawk County Democrats chairperson. Quote, there is no provision within the national or state bylaws governing the League of Women Voters that explicitly restricts an elected board member from concurrently holding a position with a partisan organization while hosting or moderating a forum, Brown said in a statement. The League has sponsored debates for decades. Craig Lohman, chairperson of the Blackhawk County Republicans, sent an email to the Courier stating, quote, this is clearly a partisan move, no matter how you slice it. If the time has come for party chairs to moderate local debates, the Blackhawk County GOP deserves to have a seat at the table too, unquote. Although he didn't participate in the debate, Simon said it doesn't sound like it was going to be a fair forum anyway. But he said he didn't miss the forum because Brown was moderating. Grider also said neither candidate knows who the moderators will be before the debate. And listeners, at this time we'd like to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, December 4th on IRIS, I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Steve Edwin McCray, 76, of Cedar Falls, died unexpectedly at his home on Thursday, November 16th. Born May 31, 1947, in Minnesota, Steve lived and was educated in several states and school districts before graduating from Cedar Falls High School in 1965. He attended the University of Northern Iowa and majored in history. It was the late 1960s and early 1970s. He dropped out several times, but still worked camera department jobs at Black's Department Store, Woolco, and as assistant manager at College Square, Walgreens. Steve and Kathleen Stabel married at St. Stephen Catholic Student Center on College Hill, Cedar Falls, on May 27, 1972. After the ceremony, they walked up to the street to Wesley Foundation for the reception. Steve started his employment with Cedar Falls Public Schools in 1975. Highlights included teaching language arts and math at Holmes Junior High. During that time, he completed a master's in gifted education from the University of Northern Colorado at Greeley. Steve's mentor at Greeley was the late Dr. George Betts. It was now the late 80s and early 90s, and he loved teaching. His grades improved radically, and he was married. He then accepted the position of instructor for Alpha Program for the Gifted at Cedar Falls High. He began his day with an early bird class for 10th graders, followed by independent study for other students. After a few years, he became a co-instructor of the Language Arts and Enrichment course in the English department. He was proud of the darkroom photography program he offered. On Wednesdays, he worked with Alpha students and Cedar Falls City Hall cable services to offer the live broadcast program hotline. His classroom was a safe room for all students, including LGBTQ. He was very proud of receiving a Gold Star Teacher Award. His greatest human talent was unconditional acceptance. Steve was a lifelong fan of cartoon books, science fiction, and fantasy newspapers, movies, Yankees games, and walleye fishing. His spring breaks as a teacher involved travel. In retirement, his favorite trips were to Alaska, Barcelona, all stops Mediterranean, and everything Canada. He was a talented photographer and raised prize-winning Atlantic giant pumpkins. Retirement held a surprise. In his early 60s, nieces Shannon and Caitlin McClintock moved to Cedar Falls, where they lived with Steve and Kathy prior to finding a new home with their mother. In college, they would often come back to stay for holidays and weekends. Important affiliations included being a career member of the Cedar Falls and Iowa State Education, the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association, and the Democratic Party. Please join our gathering at the Western Home Diamond Event Center from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m. on Friday, December 8th. Dress is casual, and there is additional parking in the back. There will be no church service or burial. His ashes will be scattered. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation on behalf of Steve McRae to the Western Home Communities, Northeast Iowa Food Bank, or Three House Collaborative Campus Ministries. Visit www.dahlfuneralhome.com to express online condolences with the family. Martin Andrew Johnson, 72, of Traer, Iowa, passed away on Friday morning, November 24th. Martin was born on August 19th, 1951, in Kingsley, Iowa, the son of Dale and Wilma McNabb Johnson. Following high school graduation, Martin attended Westmar University, where he earned his Bachelor of Arts degree in education. On October 24th, 1987, Martin was united in marriage to Sherry Ann Heath at Marengo, Iowa. They lovingly raised two daughters in Traer. Martin taught art and industrial technology for over 30 years for the North Tama Junior and Senior High School system. He retired in 2010. Martin showed incredible strength in the first few years as he battled medical issues. He was blessed in 2022 to receive a kidney transplant. Martin enjoyed reading, tending to his vegetable garden, going on RV trips with Sherry, playing with his grandchildren, drawing and artwork, caring for his kitty, and most of all, spending time with his family. At a later date, Martin's loved ones will be having a private celebration of his life. Memorials in his name may be directed to the Tama County Humane or the National Kidney Foundation. Online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly is assisting Martin's family. Paul James P.J. Porter. Family and friends, a reminder to please join us for P.J.'s parting party on Saturday, December 9th, from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. at the Diamond Event Center in Cedar Falls. There will be a short program offered at 3:30 p.m. The original obituary can be found on the Locke Funeral Services website, lockfuneralservices.com. Minerva Louise Nuss Brown, 91, of Dysart, Iowa, passed away on Tuesday, November 28th, at Hallmark Care Center in Mount Vernon, Iowa. A funeral service is planned for 11 o'clock a.m. on Monday, December 4th, at Zion Lutheran Church in Dysart, Iowa. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 11 o'clock a.m. prior to the service. Minerva was born in a farm home several miles east of Buck Creek, rural Sumner, on June 13, 1932. She was the daughter of Ernest and Minnie Shetler Nuss. She was raised in Buck Creek, Iowa, and attended Sumner High School, graduating in 1950. Minerva graduated from Wartburg in 1953 and went on to teach in Grundy Center. There she met Kenneth Brown, and they were united in marriage on June 18, 1954, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Buck Creek. They started their marriage life in Primgar, Paulina area, before settling in Dysart. Minerva was an active member of Zion Lutheran Church, where she was involved as an organist, choir member, Sunday school teacher, and part of Bible study groups. Music was an important part of her life, and she instilled this love in her children and countless piano students as she taught piano lessons for 26 years in Dysart. Minerva returned to college, UNI, to obtain a BA in education. She then worked at Hawkeye Community College, helping adult students obtain their GED. She was recognized for her service by receiving the President's Award in 1999. Minerva retired in 2001. She loved attending family events, reading, being involved in church activities, and pursuing her love of music by attending concerts and continuing as an organist. She will be greatly missed by all who knew and loved her. Keith E. Hopper, 91, of Washburn, passed away on Sunday, November 12th, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital in Waterloo. He was born on November 17, 1931, in Sauk County, Wisconsin, the son of Everett M. and Ruth V. Hitchcock Hopper. Keith graduated from West Waterloo High School in 1949. He married Gladys Bird on June 26, 1954, in Aurora. She preceded him in death on August 11, 2023. Keith joined the Navy on August 30th of 1949. He served on the USS Menifee. He attended the U.S. Naval Training Center at Electronics School on Treasure Island, San Francisco, and continued the trade following discharge. Keith worked as a radio tech for Northwestern Bell Telephone for 32 years, retiring in 1986. He was a member of the Telephone Pioneers of America and volunteered in the Boy Scouts. Keith practiced judo for many years, earning a black belt. A celebration of life for Keith will be held at 11 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. on December 9th at Lock at Tower Park, 4140 Kimball Avenue in Waterloo, with military honors to take place at 1 o'clock p.m. by the U.S. Navy and American Legion Becker Chapman Post 138 and VFW Post 1623 at the funeral home. Condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Lock at Tower Park is assisting the family, and their phone number is area code 319-233-3146. Ruth Marie Linderman, 86, of Waterloo, passed away on Monday, November 27th, at Friendship Village. Ruth was born on February 12, 1937, in Tripola, Iowa, the daughter of Oscar and Leona Bunger Kreese. She was a graduate of Tripola High School and Gates Business College. On February 23, 1957, she was united in marriage to Harold Bud Linderman. During her career, Ruth was a bookkeeper first at Pinkerton Building Supplies and then for many years at Peterman and Hayes. Before retiring, she was employed by Riley's Floors and More. Ruth was a member of the American Businesswomen's Association and First Congregational Church in Waterloo, and she was also involved in the Quilter Guild. Ruth loved to play cards and was a member of several card groups. Funeral services for Ruth will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, December 4th, at First Congregational Church in Waterloo. Visitation will be on Sunday, December 3rd, from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m. at Richardson Funeral Service in Cedar Falls. Interment will be at Greenwood Cemetery in Cedar Falls. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice. Online condolences at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Elizabeth Marie Kelly, 94, of Fort Dodge, passed away Sunday, November 5th, 2023, at the Marion Home. Betty Hayes was born January 9th, 1929, in Waterloo, Iowa, to Edward and Agnella Strigel Hayes. She graduated from St. Mary's High School in Waterloo, Iowa, in 1945. Following high school, Betty worked for the WCF&N Railroad. Betty was united in marriage to Gene Kelly on August 18, 1949, at St. Mary's Church in Waterloo, Iowa. Due to Gene's railroad career, the family moved to Kentucky and Illinois before relocating to Fort Dodge in 1964. In addition to being a homemaker extraordinaire, Betty also worked for H&R Block, the Bath Shop, and Fanny Farmer Candies before her retirement. Betty was a longtime member of Sacred Heart and Holy Trinity Parish. She was active in Catholic Daughters of the Americas and Legion of Mary. She also was a proud member of Beta Sigma Phi for over 75 years. A very special thank you to Betty's friends at the Marion Home, both staff and residents. Memorials may be left to Campus Ministries at Holy Trinity Church in Fort Dodge, Iowa, or St. Edmund Pre-K Program, Fort Dodge, Iowa. Services have been held. Shirley Ann Hahn, 82, of Plainfield, passed away on Monday, November 27th, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital. Samuel A. Olson, 81, of Olathe, Kansas, passed away on Sunday, November 19th. Samson was born on November 23, 1941, in Waterloo, Iowa, to Ethan and Esther Buxton Olson. He was a 1959 graduate of Waterloo West High School. He served in the U.S. Army. Samson was employed by Comeco Corporation, Williams Equipment Company, and later Sun Hydraulics. He was a lifelong and diehard fan of the Iowa Hawkeyes. For more information, please visit www.penwillgablekc.com. Leo Allen, 64, of Grand Island, Nebraska, formerly of Waterloo, passed peacefully on Tuesday, November 28th, at Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center. He was born April 7th, 1959, in Waterloo, son of Jack A.I. and Dorothy R. Weil Allen. He graduated from Waterloo East High School in 1978. A funeral mass will be held for Leo at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, December 16th, at Queen of Peace Catholic Church in Waterloo. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to Mass at the church. A memorial gathering and private family burial will take place in April of 2024. Memorials may be directed to the Bartles community in Waverly. Lock at Tower Park, 4140 Kimball Avenue, is assisting the family. The phone number for Lock is 319-233-3146. Visit www.lockfuneralservices.com for more information. Now, here we have two death notices. Carl E. Schuler, 92, of Waterloo, died December 28th at Friendship Village Wellspring. Visitation will be Sunday, December 3rd, at Lockett Tower Park, 4140 Kimball Avenue in Waterloo, Iowa. The funeral service will be Monday, December 4th, at 10:30 a.m. at Lockett Tower Park. burial at Waterloo Memorial Park Cemetery. www.lockfuneralservices.com. And Robert Wright, 77, departed this life on Tuesday, November 28th, at the home of his daughter, Rashonda Young. Homegoing services are 11 a.m. December 9th at Lock on 4th Street, and that's 1519 West 4th Street in Waterloo. Visitation for 1 hour prior to the services at the funeral home. www.lockfuneralservices.com. Let's continue with local news from the Courier. Rooted Carrot moving forward after consideration giving to ending a decade-long pursuit in Cedar Falls. This story by Andy Malone. Dateline Cedar Falls. The dreams of a full-service grocery store co-op are not going away, although consideration had been given to letting them slip into non-existence, according to a lengthy email shared with the Courier. Board members of the Rooted Carrot organized special member owner meetings this summer in light of the pursuit to identify a site for the future store having failed time and time again, and the number of those involved heavily in the efforts having diminished. Although caution has been given to the fact it wasn't just a simple advisory vote, the email provided by the board president, Jody Hugerich, shares that 271 of the 382 member owners, or 70.94%, voted to move forward. The other 111 voted not to move forward. The 382 member owners were only 31.75% of the total number of 1,203 registered with the co-op. The end goal is a 7,000 square foot store near or in downtown Cedar Falls at an estimated cost of around $3 million. The organization formed around a decade ago. The parcel at 123 West 7th Street, once made available by then-owner Brent Dahlstrom, is the only site to have been revealed publicly as having fallen through. St. Patrick Catholic Church later purchased that half-acre at $960,000, obtained a code change, and is planning to turn it into a parking lot across the street from its main facilities. According to the email, the organization has, quote, no new site prospects. Other potential ones had failed, unquote. Quote, we are very encouraged by the number of people who attended the summer meetings and their willingness to talk about the co-op and share the story with others, wrote Hugerich to members last month. Quote, we are very thankful to those who have volunteered to manage volunteers, write grants, reach out to business partners, and join our communications, membership, and community relations committees. Quote, at this time, we will be moving forward with our goal of opening a full-service grocery store co-op. Other startup co-ops have done it after 10 years, and we can too. However, there is lots of work to be done, unquote. The call for action still stands, as was made clear in the email for member owners. Questions can be directed to info@rootedcarrot.coop. Old-fashioned Christmas set for Denver on Saturday and Sunday. Story written by Donald Promnitz. Dateline, Denver. The 20th annual Old-Fashioned Christmas event is set for this weekend at Denver Community Center. The event will run from 11 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. on Saturday and 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. The first old-fashioned Christmas event was held by the Denver Betterment Committee in 2003. Quote, bright and beautiful is the theme of the Festival of Trees, featuring trees decorated by local businesses, churches, organizations, and individuals. Decorated tables and gingerbread houses will also be on display. On Saturday afternoon, Santa will be arriving with bags of candy, and an ornament-making craft project will take place at the Denver Public Library starting at 2 p.m. for those wanting to see him. Smith Studio will take pictures of children with Santa. Those who donate a new unwrapped toy, book, game, or stuffed animal will receive their portrait at no cost. There's a mailbox in the entry to the library, so children can mail their Christmas wish list to Santa. Girl Scout Troop 3095 will be singing Christmas music at the community center starting at 1 p.m. Piano students of Michelle Dopke will be performing at 2 p.m., and Allison's Dance Center students will perform their routines at 4 o'clock p.m. Local businesses will have specials during the event, and a holiday bazaar featuring local vendors will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Denver American Legion. The Cookie and Candy Walk will be from noon to 2:30 p.m. at St. Paul United Church of Christ. Denver Cares will have a Christmas tree in the lobby area where ornaments can be selected. Selected gift items on the ornaments can be purchased and returned to the community center for distribution during the holidays. Prizes will be provided by the Denver Betterment Committee. Suggested donations for tickets are $1 each, or 7 tickets for $5. The drawing will be held at 2:30 p.m. on Sunday. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, December 4th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can access a recording of today's reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state that we read. Just go to our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.